Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Good afternoon. I'm going to be chatting shortly to Ariane Shireen about her new book, The Real Sinead O'Connor. I thought I'd play this first.
Compares to you.
such a beautiful song and such a beautiful voice. Sinead O'Connor there, Nothing Compares to You. Joining us on the line is Ariane Shireen. She's the author of various self-help books, including The How of Happy and Talk Yourself Better, as well as the celebrity bestseller The Atheist's Guide to Christmas. Her new book, The Real Sinead O'Connor, is more in-depth and up-to-date than any Sinead biography currently on sale. It includes full-length interviews with six of Sinead's friends and peers. Welcome to the show, Ariane.
Oh, it's great to be here. Hello.
Hi, it's lovely to have you with us. Thank you for joining us. So how did this book come about?
Well, I was very fascinated by the obituaries for Sinead when she sadly passed away at 56 a year ago. And I was struck by the similarities between our lives, in that we had both been abused by one of our parents and we'd both developed the same mental health disorder, borderline personality disorder. And it struck me that I would like to tell her story, and that it would be a huge honor to be able to do so. And I got a publishing deal to write a biography of her. But because I'd never met her, I wanted to interview people who had and who did know her. And so I interviewed journalists such as Simon Hattinston from The Guardian, Caroline Sullivan, who's the pop writer for The Guardian, Neil McCormick, who had known Sinead pretty well, who was The Telegraph's chief rock critic. And I felt that this helped create like a fuller picture of who she was and how she lived her life. She was an incredible woman. She was iconic. She was legendary. She was a feminist, although she didn't identify as a feminist. And just, as you say, a beautiful singer and a fantastic songwriter.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that happened to you when you were younger, and that you identified with her in that way. Has this been a kind of cathartic experience for you then, in a way?
Yes, it has. And I could recognize a lot of her patterns in my own life. So, for instance, she got married four times, but all the marriages were very short-lived. She became a single mum to her four children. I only got married once, but coincidentally, it was in the same Las Vegas wedding chapel as Sinead.
Wow. And
I became a single mom as well. And having borderline personality disorder means that you have kind of a very black and white way of thinking about the world. So everything is wonderful or everything is awful. And that means that often people who suffer from it make several suicide attempts across their lives. And that was true of both of us. But it was just an honor, a real privilege to be able to write about everything that she went through. And she did go through an awful amount in 56 years. I mean, she was 18 when she signed her first record deal. She was 20 when she gave birth to her first child, 20 when her first album came out. And then she was a global superstar by the age of 23 with Nothing Compares to You.
Yeah, she went through a lot and a lot of trauma as well at a very young age. She'd been through quite a bit before she turned 18.
She really had. Her mum was incredibly abusive towards her, and her mum actually died in a car crash when Sinead was 18, and that is something that she never got over. So she constantly wrote songs about her mother and about motherhood, because she was really trying to exorcise that demon from her memory and her life. For me, it was my dad, but, you know, I could understand the way that has huge repercussions on your life, and it changes everything about you and the way you live. So I thought that if anybody could tell her story who wanted to tell it, who didn't know her, and there haven't been any other biographies about her coming out to my knowledge, then maybe somebody with BPD would be able to empathize with what she'd been through with a level of compassion that maybe somebody without BPD wouldn't maybe have.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So with all the people that you spoke to then who knew her and worked with her and interviewed her, what were some of the kind of nuggets that they gave you about her that maybe you didn't know or didn't realize before?
Well, I knew she had a fantastic sense of humor, but she was really badass. She didn't do anything that she didn't want to do. It was kind of amazing because, for instance, when she first got her record deal, her record company wanted her to dress really femininely and grow her hair long and wear short skirts. And she accused them of wanting her to dress like their mistresses. And as a result, she decided to shave her head, and her hair would remain shaved or cropped throughout her career. And she decided to wear combat trousers and big combat boots and dress in a very masculine style. And funnily enough, you know, this iconic look helped her become far more successful and far more famous because it was so memorable. And that's, you know, what most people remember about her, that amazing image, especially in the Nothing Compares to You video when she's crying and she's staring at the camera with her shaved head. So in kind of flouting what the record company wanted her to do, she ended up becoming bigger than they could have hoped. And then also when she fell pregnant with her first child, she was in the midst of recording her debut album. And the record company sent her to their doctor. And the doctor said, well, you owe it to the record company to have an abortion because they've spent £100,000 on this album. And she thought about it and then she said, no, I'm not going to have an abortion. She wasn't anti-abortion and she would go on to have two abortions later in her life. But she kept the baby and the album was delayed while she gave birth. And when they shot the album cover, the record company said to the photographer, you've got to shoot above the stomach because we don't want anybody knowing that she's pregnant.
Wow. It's amazing, isn't it? I guess it was her, well, obviously rebellious side, thinking, who are a record company to tell me that I can't have a baby and should have an abortion?
Well, exactly. It's kind of unthinkable now. I mean, that would be, you know, all over Twitter. That would be headline yeah. news now. But yeah. back in the 1980s, this was, you know, very pre-internet. And these things were secrets, weren't they? I mean, there's so much stuff that happened in the 80s and before that that never came out and that we don't know about because there was no internet. So yeah. now we have a centralized way of disseminating information, but we just didn't have that back then.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would definitely have been a furore. And she wasn't shy about talking about these things either. She was very outspoken and she was very honest and she just said what she felt and said what she thought all the time, which is amazing in this age of, you know, celebrities who are so guarded and have PRs sitting in on their interviews.
Yeah, so, oh, yeah. definitely. And looking at that song, Nothing Compares to You, I remember thinking for a long time that it was her who wrote it and she was writing about her own mother because of the story between the two of them. But it was Prince who wrote the song, wasn't it?
That's right. It was Prince. But his version of the song was very, very different from her version. So his was kind of, you know, funk, jazz, soul. And it wasn't as heartfelt. It wasn't, you know, you didn't have the kind of strings and the big production that she had, and her version is a lot more emotional. She and Prince would actually fall out in 1991. She would go to his house and they would actually have a fist fight. She tells this story in her autobiography, in her memoir. And she said after that, as far as I'm concerned, it's my song. So she says, my song. And as a result, when the documentary Nothing Compares about Sinead came out in 2022, Prince's estate, run by his half-sister, refused them permission to use her version of the song because the rights belonged to him. So, yeah, there was definitely beef between them, like, for, you know, 30 years.
Wow, how interesting. And one of the other famous, definitely, moments of her life and career, extremely controversial, of course, is when she tore up a picture of Pope John Paul II. Tell us about that, because that was huge. That had a real impact, didn't it?
It really did, yeah. So she was scheduled to appear on Saturday Night Live. And she'd taken this photo from her childhood home when her mother had died years previously. And this photo that her mum had of Pope John Paul II in his robes. And she'd said that she'd always wanted to use the photo, but she never knew how. And because she'd been abused as a child, she was very, very passionate about fighting for the rights of children who had been abused. And the child sex abuse scandal in the Catholic Church hadn't yet become public knowledge, but it had become public knowledge in Ireland, but not the rest of the world. And I think even there, you know, it was kind of slightly under the radar. And so she thought that this appearance on Saturday Night Live, which was, you know, pretty much the biggest entertainment show in the whole world, was a chance to expose what was happening in the Catholic Church. And in the rehearsal, she held up a picture of a refugee child as she sang the song War by Bob Marley. But in the actual live version, she held up the picture of the Pope and she ripped it in two. And there was an audible gasp from the audience. And there was absolute panic, as you can imagine, among the production team. Like, oh my goodness, like, clearly they hadn't prepared for this, because how would you? Why would you prepare for it? And her career never recovered in the US. She never had a big hit there again. But she was happy with it. I mean, she felt that what she'd done was right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turned out that in years to come, she was vindicated and she was totally proven right about what was going on in the Catholic Church.
Oh, absolutely. And it's fascinating, isn't it? Because, you know, these kind of things are talked about so much more now, and it's all over social media. And, you know, it's well known, not just abuse within the Catholic Church, but all kinds of other places as well. Like, it's everywhere, sadly, but it's good that it's being talked about, and it's good that these people are being exposed. And it's sad that when she did this exposure, she was torn apart, basically, for the metaphor. You know, people never forgave her for, as if she'd done something so bad, not the people that she was talking about.
Exactly. And I think because, again, these were pre-internet times, people were just not aware of what had happened. And they thought of the Pope as, you know, a kindly elderly man who was, you know, a religious figure who was very venerated and very loved by millions. And they just weren't aware of the symbolism of what she'd done and why she'd done it. And she said that it was the start of people thinking of her as crazy, and that never stopped in the press. So for years after that, she was subject to loads of stories about how she was mentally ill, and yeah, that she was mad. And her life was quite volatile because she made several cries for help and suicide attempts and publicized her suicide attempts and that she was seeking help. Again, she was vilified and people were like very judgmental about her mental health struggles. So she had a really hard time of it. But she was kind of really amazing. She was a badass. She was a great mom to her kids. She was very loving. She was very honest. And I think that, you know, we won't see her like again. And that's a huge shame.
Yeah, very, very sad. Very sad. And was it about a year ago that she died now?
That's right. Yeah, it was the 26th of July last year.
Gosh. Gosh. And were you able to speak to any of her family?
No, I didn't want to intrude on their grief because it was very soon after she had passed away that I was commissioned to write the book. So I was commissioned in August. And so I decided to restrict it to people like journalists who knew her but didn't have that, weren't in the middle of that emotional upheaval.
Yeah.
I felt that was best because I'd finished it by October. So I wrote it really quickly, but very intensely. So I kind of immersed myself in her albums, in other books about her, in news stories about her. And I kind of tried to imagine what it would have been like to live through all that.
Yeah. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called The Real Sinead O'Connor and it's by Ariane Shireen. It's available on our website, tre.radio. Ariane, thank you so much for joining us and you take care.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.